Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. Today, I will be chatting with Dr. Rebecca Diamond. Dr. Diamond is a hospital pediatrician in New York City and an assistant professor of pediatrics at Columbia University. She's the author of the book, Parent Like a Pediatrician. You can also find her on Instagram at Parent Like a Pediatrician. Dr. Diamond is giving away a few copies of her new book to anyone who shares today's episode on social media or with a friend. Simply mention Parent Like a Pediatrician and Motherhood Meets Medicine on Instagram, or simply text a friend and suggest the episode, and then email me via the email I have in the show notes. You do not need to have social media to enter. In this episode, we will discuss a few different topics, including how to handle and navigate misinformation as a parent online, the importance of the pediatric vaccine schedule and why we should stick to it, and much more. Let's dive in. Just a little disclaimer before we start this episode. This podcast does not provide medical advice. The information on this podcast is for informational purposes only. No material on this site is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Good morning, everybody. Welcome Dr. Rebecca Diamond to the show today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So I was just talking with you and saying I wanted to cover so many different things today. So I think we'll start off by talking about your book and the inspiration behind it, and then we'll kind of morph into misinformation online and maybe how to gather information online in a way that can be helpful to you. And then veering off into vaccination and the pediatric vaccination schedule and the history of anti-vaccination and, you know, whatever else we come up with, which I'm sure, you know, the conversation will veer off many times. But that's the beauty of this, is that we can kind of just talk about whatever we want. But that's going to be the overview of what we're chatting about today. So
that sounds amazing. I mean, it is exactly what I want to talk about. So that's perfect.
Yes.
And it's also related to me. You know, it's hard to tell a really linear story and jump from one thing to another, because to me, it's all just one and the same. The idea of misinformation and parenting and pediatrics and this kind of jumble that you wade into every day as just a human, and especially a parent trying to navigate the internet and your social circles and scientific information and a new pandemic, it seems like, or challenge or public health crisis every 2 days. So it just completely overwhelms. I mean, there was a point at which someone was like, monkeypox, are we doing this?
Are we doing this? Yeah.
I was like, I think so, because it's not that the world was ever a super safe or, you know, predictable place, but the level with which we have this escalating uncertainty and anxiety from some real scary things these days, like, it's really true. And speaking to your point about the internet and misinformation, it's just like in your face more than ever. And you don't even know what to believe, even sometimes from reputable sources. So the parenting overwhelm specifically and related to all these things is what started me on my book. You know, I was a pediatrics resident back in the mid-2010s, and I had my daughter as a pediatric resident. And I was sort of like, you know, I had a tough pregnancy and postpartum, which I talk about all the time, but I was a little cocky, because I was like, well, I know about kids. Like, this is going to be fine. Like, I know babies and I know breastfeeding's going to be what I do and safe sleep is going to be what I do and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to follow all this. And then through, you know, a confluence of all sorts of things postpartum, you know, I had a lot of mental health struggles. I had some physical health struggles. I was pushed back to work way too soon because we're in America and that's what happens. And I was suddenly like, oh, I don't got this. I really felt like I did not got this. She did not got this. And I went to the pediatrician sort of thinking like, oh, they were literally my friends. like I was going to see either my co-residents or my preceptors or everything. And I was like, well, this is going to be great. I'm going to nail this. And I felt so deeply that I was not nailing this. Like, I found the appointments really anxiety provoking for me, and nothing that any of the pediatricians were doing wrong per se, but I remembered being on the other side of it, and it felt like it was a checklist, and was I doing this, that, and the other thing? Meanwhile, I was screaming body and mind because I was so exhausted. I was so overwhelmed. And this is someone who I had more support than most people have in the world, let alone, you know, in my situation that has obviously a good amount of privilege baked into it. And I was just like, oh my God, how does anyone do this? How does anyone try to follow what we think is safe and scientific and best for babies without completely losing themselves? I really felt like I lost myself postpartum through just the expectations I put on myself, the inability to find guidance that worked for me. Just the, you know, I mean, I don't have to tell any other mom or parent out there. It kind of feels impossible, I think. No matter how well you actually are doing, it's just there is something about this confluence of internet and science and society and the expectations we put on ourselves. Somehow it just feels like there is no way to feel good about what you're doing. I mean, maybe some people do, but I did not.
Yeah. I do think it was probably easier. I mean, in the 80s and 90s when you didn't have the internet telling you, it's just this overload. I talk about this all the time, just like this overload of information that you don't need at all. But then, of course, it creates this significant anxiety because you're like, oh, I should be doing all of these things that who knows who's even saying these things, you know, but it's
right.
It becomes like more things onto your checklist that you need to accomplish or buy or whatever it might be. And no, it's just really stressful.
Yeah. No, it's totally that. And you know, to your point of like, I'm not the kind of person, and we'll talk about this more with the anti-vaccine and the vaccine issues later on. I'm not the kind of person who's like, well, back in the good old days or back before science and this, everything was natural and good, because that's not right either. You know, it's not that the scientific advances are bad in and of themselves, or the fact that we have more infrastructure in some settings that could help new moms and new parents. Like, technology in and of itself isn't bad. I mean, and I felt that so much because I was like, wait, am I anti-science? Like, you know, yeah. I was like, why am I so stressed by this? Like, I like science and I like information and I should be able to sort through it. But you really can't, even as a pediatrician. I really had these moments where I was like, well, is this right? Like, you know, this sort of is a little different than what I learned in residency, but this one feels more right for me. Or suddenly I'm realizing that there's a trade-off of risks and benefits to practicing some of the American Academy of Pediatric guidelines, and I'm modifying them. And is that okay? Like, so it was just a real mess, like a deep, deep, real mess. And once I sort of emerged from that, and as I started answering a lot of questions from other parents and friends of friends and things like that, I felt kind of strongly that I was able to actually create an approach that made sense for me and started to make sense for others. Sort of like you said, how do you sort through information? What is important? What's less important? You know, what are some of the things that it's like there sort of is more or less only one right answer, like vaccines, versus what are the things where it's like, well, actually, the evidence isn't that strong. And so you have to do what makes sense for you, but you don't have to necessarily agonize over it so much. So that became this book, which, you know, I really was unable to find a different source of information that had a philosophy that was more or less what I think of as middle ground, which is, you know, we have some sources like, you know, the official guidelines from places that are sort of like do X, Y, and Z, and they feel pretty rigid. And then but they have science, which I like, you know, I am a fan of science. And then you have some other places that are more or less like, this is overwhelming, so do whatever you want. And I feel like I get that. Like, I really needed permission to do more of the things that worked for me as a new parent. But also, if you don't have the expertise of, I think, a pediatrician, honestly, and the ability to actually look through the data and decide what really makes sense in which situation. And not that a parent has to be doing all this and, you know, balancing, juggling data in real time, but the idea of the point of a pediatrician in the parenting world is to look through what we have and say, here's a range of options that could make sense. And in your situation, with your specific pediatrician who knows you, let's come up with a plan that makes sense. And I wasn't really seeing that or anything like that. So I said, let's write a book. Why not?
Yeah. No, I loved reading about your inspiration behind Parent Like a Pediatrician. I think it's pretty genius, especially just in this day and age of social media and the internet at your fingertips, literally all the time. It's just nice to have a book out there that kind of's like, okay, kind of ignore everything that you're seeing online and just focus on what you need to focus on, because it's so incredibly overwhelming. So I wanted to touch on a few things you had mentioned. So the first was, I love this like realistic take that you have on parenting and how you mentioned like vaccines are something that we know is safe and effective and really important for our children, right? So that is, for me personally, we always stay on schedule with our kids for. But then there's some things that are like, okay, well, it's suggested that you don't use a pacifier past a certain age, for example. So I have four kids, right? So this is just a great example. So my husband goes, and he'll usually take my youngest to the pediatrician because I don't love watching her get her vaccines. I would rather him do it. Like, he's really good at it. Like, he'll just be like, okay, like, this is what we're doing. But for me, I'm like, oh, God, she's going to cry. So, you know, like, just drama central. So he'll take her and he's like, okay, they told me that she needs to get rid of this pacifier. It's affecting her teeth and her bite. And I looked at him and I was like, you can't be serious, right? And he's like, what do you mean? And I was like, I'm home with her the majority of the time. I am not taking away the pacifier. Okay. It's not happening. And he's like, but her teeth. And I'm like, her teeth fall out. I am not concerned. So like, that's just one of those things where I'm like, she's my only baby to take a pacifier. Fourth baby took a pacifier. And I really don't know like much about it, like as far as like how I'm going to take it away. But I just know that I'm not taking it away right now. And then the other thing too was, I remember at every year visit, it's always like, okay, do they still have a bottle? Like, are they, you know, have you tried to transition? And it's one of those things where with my first baby, I'm like writing notes and I'm like, take away the bottle. Oh my gosh. Like, I'm a day late. You know what I mean? Like, oh gosh, like I've missed this opportunity. Like, her language will be affected. Like, all this crazy stuff inside my head. And then lo and behold, third and fourth babies were on a bottle like an extra couple months while I just switched over to a sip. Like just things that you can go at your own pace and figure it out. Like, this is not going to be super damaging. Like, this is not,
this is inspiring so many thoughts and feelings. I co-sign all of that heartily. Like, I think there's so many things I want to say in regards to that, but I love that you came to that conclusion, which is like, some things really don't matter as much as others. And that's just how it is. And it can feel like, I think that's part of what drew me to this whole world that I'm in, is it can feel like every single decision is life or death, is so important. And it's not. Some decisions are super important, but in general, it's about how confident you feel in your decisions. It's about the pattern of the decisions you're making. It's about whether or not they're within this realm of safe options. And I've had parents, you know, ask me like the most precise, stressed out questions, like, I'm transitioning to cow's milk from formula. Do I do one bottle and then two bottles? Do I do a bottle? Do I mix them? Do I do this? And I'm sort of like, I don't want to be dismissive, but it truly could not matter less. It really couldn't. And I say that from the point of all of that angst that you have, all of that worry that you're somehow doing something wrong. You're not. But part of this is I think a confidence issue, because we, even me as a new parent, especially me, we've been told that, and I think it's to sell things, honestly, but we've been told that we can't make any decisions anymore as parents. And the reality is you can. And if it feels like next month is a better month to start your switch to a sippy cup, that's probably right. Maybe you have something going on in your life that would be more stressful. And 1 month of a sippy cup, you know, or until the sippy cup comes, is not a big deal. It's just not. And so I really love everything you're saying. And, you know, the contrast to the vaccines is interesting to me because that is something where we have found this really, really narrow range of safe options. And because I think we're in this vulnerable state of almost like decision paralysis with everything we're doing, then when these influences come in from the outside and erode our confidence in things, they're like, well, do you really want to get your vaccines on time? And you're sort of like, I thought I did, but why shouldn't I? And, you know, and then they come in and you're in that vulnerable place.
Okay. So let's start back where I was asking you. So have you read the book Educated by Tara West?
I'm actually not sure. I've read a lot of books of that ilk is what I'm guessing, but I don't know that I've read that specific one.
So it's really, really great. And the reason why I mention it is so Tara grew up in this household. And it's a memoir. So it's all about her life growing up. And she grew up in a house where her father believed in a lot of conspiracies and they never, ever saw a doctor or a provider for any reason. I think maybe just like a handful of times any one of them ever went. And the mother used like essential oils for everything. And so anyway, it's all about her life. And it's an incredible book. Like I really loved it. And I just recently read it. But the reason why I bring it up is because we talked about this earlier, but I wanted to just say that I always, like I would say 99% of the time, right? Or 99.9% of the time, parents want to do the best for their kids. Like they are just looking for the best information and the best way to serve their children. And by not vaccinating, I don't think that they're like, I would never come from a place that's like, okay, they want to harm their children. No, by not vaccinating, they truly believe that they are doing something that is in good intentions with their children. They're truly scared for whatever reason. And so I loved this book because it's just a great example of a family that the parents were so scared of modern medicine and of vaccines that they felt like it was really bad for their kids and they didn't seek out any type of medical care and they didn't use seatbelts. They didn't do any of these things, but it was coming from a place of, we think we're doing the right thing for our children, which in many cases, of course, like not using a seatbelt is not the right thing to do. But some people with mental health or whatever might be going on, right? I want to be speaking to everybody. And I hope that this conversation is coming from a place of just kind of like, listen and hear what we're saying. And we by no means would be judgmental towards somebody who's chosen not to vaccinate their kids. Like, I hope that this is an episode where you can listen to it and say, okay, maybe I need to rethink this, or maybe I need to just talk to some other people about this, because perhaps you're in a, you know, group of people that are all against vaccination or all against maybe even going to a medical provider at all. And that's all you know, and that's all you've grown up with. And that is what you feel like is the best for you and for your kids, you know? So it can be really hard too, because you go online and all it takes is one article and the inability to vet this information. And it's like, oh my gosh, you second guess everything you've ever done, right? You could see an article about, you know, one vaccine with one particular side effect with one person ever. And for some reason, it makes you feel like your whole world has collapsed. And oh my gosh, every vaccine I've ever given my child is really harmful to them. And you can kind of spiral, you know, and I understand how that can happen. And so it's just one of the reasons why having so much access to the internet and to other people is so dangerous, you know?
No, that's completely true. I mean, yeah. Just, I've been really, really honest about my journey with processing all of my feelings about people who don't vaccinate their children. And I, you know, reflecting now, I don't know, like 10 years after I'd started my medical training, I did not always feel so, I didn't always have the kindest takes on it. And you know, I was young. I was a 20 something year old. I went to, you know, I had a specific education. I came from a medical family. I went to med school. I didn't understand how it was possible to not want to vaccinate your child, because all that information that I kind of took for granted that other people might have. And so in my mind, it was like, well, if you're not vaccinating, you're really, really harming your child. And I didn't have a sense of the full picture of the anti-vax movement and the history of the anti-vaccine movement and the scope of the current anti-vaccine propaganda machinery that's in place. So I was pretty naive and I was probably more judgmental than I would like to admit, but I ended up training in a place, my residency, where there's a lot of people who didn't vaccinate their kids. It was a little kind of a small little epicenter of a specific type of anti-vaccine propaganda and sentiment. And I was really frustrated and not necessarily as patient as I would have, you know, wanted to be. But, you know, that's part of your journey. You have to learn more information and get more experiences. And it really took for me truly, truly having a child and being in that moment postpartum of like, I am so worried about my kid. I am so stressed that something bad is going to happen to her. And everywhere I look, the pediatricians are stressing me out. You know, I hate to throw us under the bus, but we can be very stressful. You know, it's not necessarily what we're saying or even how we're saying it, but the fact that we are the ones talking a little more realistically about kind of how dangerous it can be to have a baby and, you know, how we do this and what we say, I think certainly should and could evolve, but it's very easy for someone else who is an anti-medicine person, anti-science, anti-vaccine, anti-establishment, usually almost always selling something, if not at least just their personality. These companies are selling things, which I have tried to help debunk and expose and show people that this is not out of the kindness of their own hearts that they're telling you not to vaccinate. But there are people coming in and saying, all that scary medical stuff is nonsense. If you just do things like Mother Nature intended, your baby's going to be fine. You don't need any worries. You can have all this natural stuff. Medicine is the problem. And I kind of got it for the first time. Of course, I wasn't swayed by the vaccine argument because that I'm such a staunch and, you know, I feel like justified proponent of vaccines, but I kind of got it for the first time. I was like, I see this. I see me being in a vulnerable place, worried that the world is going to harm my child because it is such a dangerous, scary place that, you know, medicine keeps reminding me of. And someone says I could just sort of do it like, you know, the good old days and my kid will be fine. So why not do that? You know? So that really was a big pivot for me into fueling my, you know, turning my anger from being angry at these parents who are really just being exploited by these groups to turning my anger at this infrastructure, this horrific predatory system that is making billions of dollars, generally selling supplements or subscriptions or something or their own cult of personality by sacrificing kids' lives.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Bobby. Bobby is an organic infant formula with a European-inspired formula crafted in America, delivered right to your doorstep, that meets all the FDA requirements and is founded by moms. This is the formula I used with our last baby when I noticed my supply dropping. Bobby is the only USDA organic, clean label certified formula in the US. Their medical team consists of OBGYN pediatricians, researchers, pediatric dietitians, and nurses, lactation consultants, and one doula. When it comes to ingredients, they believe every ingredient counts, and choosing anything less than top quality is irresponsible. I love that they're trying to change the script of feeding babies formula. As a mother, we have so much to worry about, and how our baby is fed does not need to be one of them. They want to provide moms with confidence, not comparison. Normalize feeding and shift the stigma from how you feed to what you feed. You can use the code MOTHERHOODMEETSMEDICINE10 for 10% off your order. That's MOTHERHOODMEETSMEDICINE10 for 10% off. This episode is sponsored by Cozy Earth. Have you ever tried Cozy Earth's bamboo sheets? They're temperature regulating, incredibly soft, and are backed by a lengthy 10-year guarantee against pilling and abnormal rips and tears. Investing in where you sleep is important since you spend approximately 1/3 of your life there. Cozy Earth also has a beautiful line of pillows, bedding, and clothing. Cozy Earth items have been on Oprah's list of favorite things for 5 years in a row and include items like the bamboo sheets and the bamboo jogger pant. If you are stumped on a Valentine's Day gift this year, Cozy Earth would be the perfect fit. What I love the most about this company is their attention to detail, including the sourcing, research and design, and creation of their products. They personally select and manage every part of their process, from where their materials are harvested, all the way down to who creates their labels. Cozy Earth creates high-end, eco-friendly products. Cozy Earth provided an exclusive offer for my listeners today. You can get 35% off site-wide when you use the code Lindsay. That's L-Y-N-Z-Y. You can go to cozyearth.com and use the code Lindsay, L-Y-N-Z-Y, for 35% off. The code and link will also be in my show notes.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This like fuels me. So I have so many things to kind of to
talk hit me
about.
Out.
Yeah. So the wellness industry.
Yeah.
Literally, like you said, a predatory system that uses, quite frankly, just uses a mother's emotion to just like increase sales. And kind of hand in hand with that is, you know, the anti-vaccination movement that has preyed on mothers for so long, and especially when it comes to losing children, whether it was the death of an actual child or a miscarriage or a stillbirth. I mean, the absolutely grotesque, awful things that I have seen online where anti-vaccine movements have used people that have lost a child and said, oh, it's because they got their vaccine a month ago. And just completely false information. I mean, it really tugs at me. I mean, it's probably one of the top three things that I get mad about.
It's
just
horrible.
So frustrating.
Yeah, it's horrifying.
Horrifying. Yeah.
Horrifying.
And we are in a day and age, right, that is unlike anything we have ever seen in the past, right? So as I had mentioned to you earlier, I wanted to talk about the history of the anti-vaccination movement because, I mean, as many people know, this is not new. This has been ever since 1796, and we introduced the smallpox vaccine, right? And this term anti-vax is also not new. It was used in the 1800s, and it was used to describe the hesitancy towards the smallpox vaccine. And throughout history, we've just seen like surges in resistance with vaccines, right? So you had the ex-physician Andrew Wakefield, right? And all of his works. And if you're interested in learning more about him, and there's plenty of books and resources out there, I can even link some things into the show notes if you're interested in that. But that caused multiple measles outbreaks in Western countries that had like eliminated it completely. And tell me what you think, Rebecca. Like, I think that we are going to look back on 2020 and COVID-19 and the COVID-19 vaccination era, and we are going to be like, this was yet another significant surge in resistance to vaccines in general, not just the COVID vaccine. I think this has had like such significant impact on people vaccinating their children or people getting the flu vaccine, like that we won't know for years to come. Like, because we are like, we're all on the internet and we're all sharing our opinions, and people are, all it takes is coming across, like I said, coming across one post or one article that even has any like connotation of like, oh, this is bad for you. And you're like, you question everything, right? And that's all it takes. That all it takes to transform somebody and what they think. And so I think we're going to look back on this and realize how incredibly dangerous and significant it really is.
Totally correct. I mean, people really don't, I love that you bring up all of the historical context that we're working in, because people really don't realize. They think of anti-vaccine and they're like, oh, now they're like, oh, you mean COVID, anti-COVID vaccine? I'm like, no, no, no. And like, oh, you mean like anti-vax from the 90s? I'm like, no, no, no. Like literally 1700s. And there are some great resources on this. You do have to do a little bit of an nerd dive into some psychological terminology and sort of get yourself in the space if you want to talk about it. But like I was talking about, there's this idea that natural things are good, and anything that is like injected or a quote unquote toxin or foreign is bad. And this is sort of like an evolutionary thing that we come by, you know, pun intended, naturally, like we come by honestly. And if you think about it, that probably makes sense. Probably in the grand scheme of evolution, something that was foreign or injected or natural was not good. And something that was more what we, you know, aligned with nature and lush grasses and things like that, you know, was better. And it's just been totally, it's a psychological phenomenon. It's been totally co-opted in recent years. But yeah, we would see historically these cycles of a plague would come out, and then people would say, okay, I'd prefer to have the vaccine over the plague. And then it would go away because vaccines are amazing and they get rid of plagues. And then people would say, well, I don't see this disease. We don't even have it. Like we don't even have this disease. So why would I get a vaccine to prevent it? And then you have to explain, well, you're getting it so that we still don't have it. And then all the psychology sort of takes over and you get these resurgences. So we saw that with diseases throughout history, but we didn't have the internet. And I think that is really one of the bigger differences, is that now, even when we have the plagues that come or the resurgences, we have this really entrenched, really compelling propaganda that gets spread everywhere that convinces us somehow to minimize the real disease tragedies we're seeing around us. And you'll see, you can't have anti-vaccine without minimizing disease. You can't have an anti-vaccine movement that doesn't say measles isn't really that bad. Well, it is that bad. Thousands of kids die from it. So why would you want that? You know, if there's a way not to get it safely, and there is. Or you'll have people say COVID isn't bad for kids. That was the thing I've been dealing with for 2 years. I think it's fine. I think it's important to reassure yourself that, you know, COVID isn't going to be the end of the world for most kids, and that it is, if we cannot prevent it and we have to accept it, kids are resilient. I get that. But if you could prevent it, why wouldn't you? And it's not reasonable to say that these things aren't worth preventing. So we get into the cycle where now our usual, you would expect with a plague, which is, you know, a pandemic is technically a plague, you would expect people would say, oh, hey, this is great. Like, let's stop it with a vaccine. And I think that's what a lot of people expected, including, I'm not trying to throw shade at adult medicine doctors at all. You guys are amazing. You know, adult doctors are amazing. But the pediatricians were sort of like, I think we were all sitting there being like, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Because I think underestimating the anti-vaccine movement was something a lot of people were doing. You know, I have a brilliant colleague. I always like to mention her, named Phoebe Danziger. We trained together and she's just so brilliant. And she's written tons of things. And she wrote an op-ed for the New York Times before the COVID vaccine came out that said the COVID vaccine won't work if nobody takes it or if people don't take it. And she talked about what we had been talking about amongst ourselves, and she had been researching and we had been researching the fact that, well, we were just sitting there being like, oh, the anti-vaccine propaganda infrastructure is going to eat this alive. Like it is a complete network throughout the world right now. It is a well-oiled machine. And if you think that they don't have everything ready to stop this vaccine campaign, like you have another thing coming. And I really think that's what happened. And we, you know, as we often are, I think we were really underprepared to combat
it. Completely. Oh, completely.
I mean, so, we couldn't even get our messaging right. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, let's be serious right now. Yeah. I think the way that America, just talking about America specifically, has handled COVID-19 and the vaccination process and all of that, and even the way the CDC is currently handling things, it's like, what on earth?
It's
embarrassing.
Like, I know there's anti-science sentiment out there, but can you cut me a break? Like, can you not make it worse with this?
Right.
Can we
all like be on the same page and just like we're changing things like every couple of days, which is how science works, right?
We need to
start off with that. Like, okay, folks, like science is something that is, you know, always evolving, and my messaging will change day to day. Period. That's where we should start.
I think that's such an important part too, because as medicine, we're having a hard time. There's a certainty in misinformation, which is to say, if you're someone who's spreading misinformation or especially disinformation, which is misinformation, but like with an agenda, if you're coming out saying that, there's no real like accountability to any sort of truth, honestly, or any sort of validation. So you can say whatever you want and you can be extremely certain. And that can change with time as you get more information, but you don't have to admit that you were wrong at any point, or you can get new information that counters what you do, but you can just use any sort of one of a million logical fallacies that you have at your disposal to say like, actually, I'm still right and here's why. So if that's what you're up against as a scientific establishment, but you're a scientific establishment, and so you follow the scientific method, which requires a level of validation and it requires a level of reevaluating and changing your opinion as you get more information and has all of these checkpoints in place, it's a really uneven battle, you know? And so you have someone who's sort of embracing uncertainty and says that changing your mind is a good thing. You have another faction that says it's not, and it's flip-flopping, and this is why people are lying to you and they're changing their minds. You're starting from two different sort of psychological premises. And I think the way some of our establishments in the United States have dealt with it has not been great, because we've sort of tried to say like, well, actually, or yes, this is certain, instead of embracing and doing a better job explaining, which is going to be hard to do, but a better job of saying like, we're starting at this point, here's the different ways in which it could go. If you hear anyone say something is certain, that's not true. And it's just this really uneven point. And so to your point about, I love to talk about the anti-vaccine movement. It's really not a monolith. I want people to be asking questions. There are tons of people who say, well, I'm not anti-vaccine, I just have a lot of questions. And for some people, that's really true. That's really, really true. And I want that. I want this to be this engaged conversation. I think the problem is, how do we separate that out from the different groups and agents who really aren't coming at this with good faith questions, have an entrenched belief or an agenda? And the more you engage with them, the more you just get sort of your energy sucked out of you, and they just get more fuel, you know, or they get more ammo to say, look at this doctor and this and that. And so we're really, like you said, like we're really in this point where how to separate out the, you know, critically thinking parents from the manipulative propagandists can be tough. And I don't know that doctors always do an amazing job. I certainly haven't always.
Yeah.
But it's important.
And I do think that's important. I'll kind of interject this right now because I think it's important. I've had conversations now. I did an episode, I think it was last fall, and I interviewed several people. I think it was six total. It was eight that, you know, grew up in a household that just was anti-vax in general, for whatever reason it might have been. And there were many stories of, I went to my doctor and or my provider, and I told them I haven't had any of my pediatric vaccines. And now that I'm ready, I've learned a lot and I want to get these vaccines. What's the first step? Like, what kind of a vaccination schedule can you put me on? And that's like this crucial turning point in how they're going to trust medical providers and science in general. And this is like, it's so frustrating for me to hear this, because it's like, oh my gosh, this is such an important, crucial point in this person's life. And sometimes the providers fail and they judge that person. They're like, well, why didn't you, you know, whatever it might be, this judgmental remark. And like you said, when you know more, you do better. And that's just that's how life works. And as you had mentioned earlier, that you hadn't always been, you know, so open and inviting to some of these people that were not willing to vaccinate their children. I kind of have the same journey as you, which was, you know, I grew up in an area where I truly never met anyone that hadn't gotten their vaccines. Like, it was like, oh, I'd be talking with friends like on the playground. They're like, well, I was at a doctor's appointment earlier, I had to get my flu shot or whatever. I never experienced any pushback to any of that. I never did. I never had anybody saying like, oh my gosh, your parents vaccinate you? Like, that's really dangerous. And I didn't have that experience until you hear about it. And I knew that there were people out there that didn't, but I didn't
truly understand any of it until, like I had said, 2020, when I had turned my platform into something that was fun and inviting and all about motherhood into something that I felt was way more important, which was advocating for the COVID vaccine and advocating for people to get more educated about this new disease and how important it was to know everything we could about it. And it was like so incredible, the amount of pushback that I received. And it got worse every week, every month that I was talking about it. I mean, it truly did. Like, you could see the progression of how angry people would get, and, you know, lost 100,000 followers right before I had deleted my account. So it's very telling, and it was scary. It was scary because I think that it's, you know, it's probably much worse now just because everything was able to gain all that steam, like you said. And, you know, our social media platforms are set up in a way that things that fuel you in a way that makes you angry and crazy, those are the things that amplify. And that is truly one of the most dangerous things that we have on the planet, because it's like, okay, well, all of those things, someone talking about a child or an adult or somebody that had gotten the COVID vaccine dies or something, that is going to go so much farther than somebody talking about how incredible it is that we were able to design a vaccine that was going to be able to save lives and keep people out of the hospital. Like, the person that, you know, passed away for whatever reason it was, that is going to gain so much more traction and damage so many beliefs, as opposed to this piece of information that's actually helpful for people. It's right. Just the way of the world.
And an extra layer, I'd be remiss if I didn't say, I know we've spoken pretty honestly about some of the times that we fall short as physicians or as scientific organizations, but in terms of what's a reputable source anymore, I mean, I have seen, and I, again, this is a different conversation and I have so many feelings, but I have seen really the decline of some really reputable scientists and physicians during the COVID, you know, propaganda era, because they, for whatever reason, it's sort of misinformation can be insidious. It can start with some provocative claims that someone makes and that gains traction. And I don't know, some of these people might really even believe what they're saying at this point. But I have seen really reputable physicians who I actually consider, you know, role models of mine, go from absolute pinnacles of science to just peddlers of misinformation for clicks and whatever it is that they're selling. And they are making a ton of money right now. And so it is to say, when someone asks me, well, how do you know if this is a good source or not? Sometimes it's not just the credentials. Sometimes it's not just looking at the MD and all the FAAs and, you know, ABCs after their name and that they went to an Ivy League med school. Like, sometimes it's not enough, especially these days, because anyone can fall prey to things. Hopefully, by and large, it's not going to be most physicians and most people who are believers in science. But you mentioned the greatest fraud that we've had recently, Andrew Wakefield, who still peddles disinformation. And that's a physician, you know, who was at one point published in The Lancet. And so, again, the idea, like, if you're finding someone on the fringes who is well-credentialed, like, that makes it all the more challenging to know what to trust. And so I really feel for people, because it's taken me, I've made a whole separate career online. You know, I've been online on social media for about 2 years now. And I have just made, it's like a full-time job for me to understand and recognize that when I see this type of thing, I have to look at their, see if they're selling anything on this link. But then I have to be really smart. And I also have to see if they have some sort of subscription. And then I, you know, like, it's a full-time job.
No, absolutely. And I love that you brought that up, because I found that during 2020, there was like this surge in accounts, right? Like wellness accounts. And very frequently, they use the term doctor. It'll be Dr. So-and-so in their profile or in their actual social media handle. And when you do a deep dive into that, it's like they are either, I'm not throwing things out there to say like these are always these people, but I'm just giving some examples of some accounts that I did come across. But like it could be a chiropractor, or it could be even like they received their doctorate in, I don't know, theology, like whatever it is. But they'll say like Dr. So-and-so, and they're like pretending they're experts in something they have like no like education on whatsoever. And again, I think a good way to approach these accounts is the first question, like, are they selling something? I think that is such a great question, because it's true. I mean, like if they're trying to make money off of like this propaganda that they're spewing every day, like they're probably selling something, whether it's an actual product or whether it's, you know, like you said, like a subscription. It could be something as easy as like, oh, hey, sign up for my, oh, what's the Substack or whatever. And yeah, I mean, it's truly unfortunate, but it can be really hard. And I think here's the other thing, and you can add to what you think as far as people navigating the social media space and the internet in general. If you can't figure out what that person's credentials are, like if you're like going down the Google route and you're putting in their name and you can't figure out where they went to school or what they graduated with for a degree, then I think you just don't listen to that person. That's just like, and I think once you do find out, it can be difficult. Like you said, I mean, there's people in every field known to man that is, can't be trusted, or, you know, is not a reputable person that you can trust. So it happens everywhere in every field. But if you're unsure, you can see what they have to say for a few times. And if anything in your head goes off that's like, ooh, I don't know, then it's probably a no.
Totally. I love that. I think that's just like a very practical, important thing. And that can apply to even like your relationship with experts that you do generally vibe with too. But the idea of, you know, I'm not saying that our instinct trumps everything. We can have instincts that are clouded by anxiety and misinformation. I've been there. But there is an element of, if you are encountering something that feels so incongruent with what you feel is right for your kid, I think you should interrogate that. I'm a big fan of asking why, even if it's me, if I'm saying something and you're like, that really doesn't work, you may want to ask yourself, why? Is it because she's saying something that really just like, it's not going to work for me? I cannot do that. I cannot practice that in my life. And I think that's going to be safe for X, Y, and Z reason. Or is it because you're realizing, well, someone told me that vaccines are bad, and why, you know, is that, where is this incongruency coming from, and how do I work through this, and how do I get more information? So it's tricky. But one thing I do want to add in, I could literally talk about this stuff forever. So thank you everyone for listening. But one thing that I think is really important is, we're talking a lot about the wellness industry, and I want to be like really specific with people that that's a very clearly defined to me term of a group that is selling the concept of wellness. It's selling the brand of things that are natural and good and holistic, but it's not actually promoting preventive health or holistic medicine. And I say that because if I heard me talking about this as a young med student who was so deeply already jaded with the medical establishment and how much stuff we do that is so wrong. Again, like anyone who knows me from my clinical work, if you were like, oh, she's anti, you know, wellness and so for the medical establishment, they would laugh, because all I do at work is rage against the machine and talk about how we do over medicalize, and we have a for-profit healthcare system in this country. And we don't fund anything. I mean, pediatric preventive health is not funded, but all these expensive things that just treat, you know, band-aid solutions later are. So, I mean, I think that's where part of my rage comes from, because I'm like, oh, you want to do preventive health? Let me show you what we could do and what we could invest in. Let me show you that we could actually have nutrition resources for children, and we could have parental leave, and we could have true breastfeeding support and not just selling supplements for it. And we could have all these things. And oh, we could have vaccines, because those prevent disease. So that's preventive medicine. But you know what I mean? So it's this, I don't want it to become this medicine versus, you know, preventive health divide. That's not at all what it is. There is a true thing as preventive, alternative, holistic medicine that scientists who really are sick of the over-medicalization that we have really support. And so I think there's a lot of rage that maybe isn't explicit, that what we are mad at is how people are exploiting that just to sell things that don't do anything and are poison.
Okay. So, Rebecca, I wanted to touch on the pediatric vaccination schedule because I have friends, I have people that I know that have been like, oh, I don't love giving my child all of 4 vaccines at once. I tend to just like space them out. Or they found a book or some sort of resource online that says it's better to do X, Y, and Z. So I would love for you to talk about who came up with the pediatric vaccination schedule, how much time and effort went into this, and how important it is to follow or not follow this pediatric vaccination schedule.
Yeah, that's really, really common. Honestly, this question concern is so common that I know I've referenced my book a few times already, but I've spent so many years trying to put together this book as a resource that really acknowledges that the vaccine concerns aren't necessarily the same as they used to be, or the information that people are getting, you know, incorrectly isn't necessarily the same. And so this idea that somehow vaccinating all at once or doing this schedule that's recommended is harmful, you know, that's something that's really taken hold. And I will definitely, so the vaccine schedule that's right now recommended by the CDC and done in the United States, it is the safest, most effective schedule we have. And that could be it. If you are reassured by the fact that we have decades and decades of research from millions of children, millions and some vaccine studies, showing how important this is, showing how well tolerated it is, specifically designed so that children are getting the vaccine before they're most likely to be exposed to the disease and they don't get it. You know, and then there's millions of charts and tables that show that we used to have a huge number of deaths and or disability from one disease. Then once we got children on this specific schedule, we didn't. And again, showing that these are very safe and well-tolerated vaccines when given at that time. And again, showing that actually, if anything, it's more stressful for kids to have vaccines that are spaced out because it's just more times going in and getting different vaccines versus when you do it all at, you know, quote unquote, all at once, like on schedule. It really is absolutely well tolerated and safe and also less stressful because it's all at the same time. And we have more vaccines now. That's another concern I get. And we do a lot more at once because we have more science than we used to. We can prevent more diseases. It's really great. And again, in my chapter, I break through all the different ingredients, types, and vaccines, including the antigens, which is the thing that mounts an immune response, and how we have lower and lower doses of antigens than we ever had. So compared to 10 years ago, they're actually having a more controlled immune response with a lower dose of an antigen, even if they're getting a 4, 5, 6 vaccines at the same time. So there's just a whole world of immunology here that is so well studied and also studied on real children that shows that when we talk about the risks and benefits, there is only benefit to following the schedule compared to risk, you know, and there's only risk for waiting because more time without a vaccine is more time to have exposure to a disease without vaccine protection. So, you know, that could be enough and I probably should leave it at that. But the thing I do want to add though is, I always ask why. Why would you wait? Not in a bad way, but why is someone telling you to wait? You know, there's endless books that try to explain sort of in this vague, fear-mongering language why you might want to wait because your baby's immune system might be overwhelmed. And not only is there no evidence for that, but why? Like, why would it be worse for you to have more vaccines earlier than later? What actually might happen? You know, there's really no evidence for that. And I really do think if we're being honest, that the people who say that they are vaccine friendly, quote unquote, or they just want you to delay, but they don't want you to skip, they're not anti-vaccine. It's a slippery slope in terms of psychology. If you can get someone to distrust a vaccine schedule, you can more easily get them to distrust other things and turn to you for advice. And I've just seen time and time again how delaying vaccines leads to avoiding vaccines. Or as a hospital pediatrician, I've absolutely seen children whose vaccines were delayed and they came in with horrific, horrific, devastating infections. And so, you know, to your point of why do this, I don't know. There really is no evidence to show that this makes sense. And if someone is telling you that it's scary to get all vaccines at once, I would just really ask why. You know, what are you scared of? Because the reality is there is, you know, it's okay to be afraid, but there's nothing actually to be afraid of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, perfect. Thank you for that. That's always a question that comes up very frequently when I ask about vaccines in general. They're like, well, what about if I just kind of space them out? But that was beautifully explained. So thank you. So I also just wanted to touch very briefly on the HPV vaccine specifically, because when I was on social media and advocating for this COVID vaccine and kind of opening this can of worms, for lack of better words, of just people flooding in and talking about vaccines, for some reason, people really loved to talk about the HPV vaccine. And it by no means linked to anything else I was saying, except for the fact that it was a vaccine. So I had a bunch of questions sent in about this. And I think the first one I want to ask you is, can you give us a clear explanation of what HPV vaccine is specifically used for? Like, what is it preventing? Because I think that can be very confusing. So I actually had somebody write to me and said, I was told by my pediatrician, and this was regarding her son, that it prevents prostate cancer. So that's what she was told, but she wasn't given any other, like that was the reason that she was given. So let's start there really quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Huge stan of the HPV vaccine here. So I'm going to say nothing other than good things about it. But, you know, that's the one word answer. If someone says, what does the HPV vaccine prevent? The answer would be cancer. It's a lot of different types of cancer, but I do like starting with that because it can be so easy to say, well, everyone gets X, Y, or Z disease, or it's not that big a deal. And then on the other hand, you can see people saying, we need to, you know, fight to end cancer. You know, cancer is a horrific and very complicated and large term to describe different things. But this is a cancer preventing vaccine, full stop. And it can prevent the vast, vast majority of certain, you know, oral and genital cancers that we have for both men and women. And that's kind of like a huge deal. I do think it's important to stop there because people, you know, young people, old people, but, you know, young adults who were just living their lives and, you know, going in for maybe a pap smear at one point. I've known young women, you know, young patients who went in and had a cervical cancer and they absolutely, you know, they died from these things. This is something that still happens. And so this is a vaccine that prevents infection with several subtypes of a virus called HPV, which is human papillomavirus. And it causes a variety of different genital ulcerations and lesions, particularly genital warts, but it really causes a lot of different cancers. And that can affect both the female and male anatomic reproductive tracts and the oral tract as it relates to different sexual activities. And people die. So why should you get it for your child? Because you don't want them to have cancer. And it, again, if we want to keep things simple, that's a pretty simple answer to me. Mm-hmm.
So a few questions from people in my community. So the first one is, how old is too old to get the HPV vaccine, right? So if they're now in their 30s or 40s, like, should they still get it? Is it still recommended?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a little bit related. This is one of those things where when things are approved, unfortunately, in the United States, that has to do when insurance will cover it sometimes or when it's on label. And so the whole concept of on label versus off label use for vaccines, again, is very complicated in our healthcare system, and it relates to different vaccines are even different than medicine. So all to say, there's no such thing as too old in the sense that the benefit will always outweigh the risk. It's a safe, well-tested vaccine that's well-tolerated, and it won't work as well in the sense that you will likely have already been exposed to many of these, and you may very well be carrying them. There's, you know, up to 80% of the population actually has already been infected and has latent infection or active infection with one of the HPV strains. So again, to the point of there's no reason to delay, earlier is better. But, you know, is there going to be some benefit possibly with you later? Yeah, absolutely. And so some of it is just the technicality of whether a certain place will provide it or it will be covered by insurance, honestly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, go get it.
Yep. And let's just talk very briefly about that. I don't know what it, I mean, this is just a very common theme with all vaccines, not just the COVID vaccine or the HPV vaccine. I just hear this all the time, but I had a few of these. So let's just touch on it. So someone said to me, I have heard a lot of issues of the HPV vaccine causing infertility.
Yep,
is this true? So let's just talk about it because this is, it's because I really do think that they just find, you know, what's going to emotionally destabilize somebody. And let's say it causes that.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I've done a lot of writing in different publications, and one of kind of my two, I would say, favorite essays, one about vaccine hesitancy. One was about the things I talked about before, about how the anti-propaganda machine takes advantage of parents. And I wrote that, you know, a year and a half back. But another one I wrote was when all these lies about fertility and the COVID vaccine were coming out. And the piece I wrote at the time really spoke to the idea, like, well, that is about the most threatening thing you could say to me as a mother. You are not only saying I could hurt my child, that's bad enough, but this vaccine wasn't approved for children, right? So at the time, how could you target a parent more? Well, what about their future children or the potential to even have more children? I think that's a very primal exploitation that is being targeted. And when the HPV vaccine came out, it's a very complex topic, but HPV is a sexually transmitted virus in large part. And so there was a huge sort of, it wasn't entirely religious, but there was certainly an element of religious groups and otherwise groups that just had this fear, just the general fear that's connected with anything that makes sexual activity safer, somehow promoting sexual activity. And so that's important to remember, because that's why the HPV vaccine specifically has such specific information. And I don't think it's a coincidence that it's reproductive information that's around it. Because if you could instill fear into a parent who is looking to have their kid, you know, abstain from having any sort of sexual activity, is looking for your kid to start a family in a very specific way and adhering to a very traditional specific way of what a family is, it would make sense to prey on the idea of fertility and future families. So it's all connected, but there's no foundation to this. It doesn't even make sense if you start to look at the biology of it and, you know, the different molecules that dance around. It's just, there's no way for this to even happen. So, but yeah, that's the long and short of it. And there's just been a lot of misinformation that's out there, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, we made the point earlier, but I mean, all it takes is for, I mean, I could hear that as somebody who's a medical professional and be like,
yeah,
wait, what? You right. know? I'm really concerned about that now. It's just, and it's so natural to have that reaction to something. And so
for,
again,
sorry, my last thing for context for people worried about fertility. So the thing that they linked it to was polysorbate 80, which is one of the ingredients, one of the preservatives in the HPV vaccine. But that's an ice cream manufacturing preservative. That's a food preservative. So the dose that you actually get from eating some ice cream is more than you would get in the HPV vaccine. So again, just the idea that's the things that catch fire. If you take maybe even not you, but if someone were to take a minute to say, okay, which ingredient are you worried about? Oh, polysorbate 80. Okay, well, I just had more of that in my ice cream. Am I going to be infertile? You know, the arguments start to sort of crumble away once we interrogate it with that lens. So right. I just had to throw that in.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, perfect. I think obviously you and I could just talk about these things, right? I mean, there's just like so many different, we covered so many different things, and I think, you know, a lot of them could have been an episode in and of itself. Let's end with the two questions I always ask my interviewees. So the first one is, if you could give one piece of advice for moms, what would that piece of advice be?
Trust yourself. I really, really give yourself, take care of yourself, trust yourself, focus on yourself. And, you know, all to say your health doesn't matter just as much as your kid's health. It is your kid's health. You know, it's not you versus them. It's not infant health versus maternal health. You have to be structurally and emotionally sound in order to care for your child. And that starts even before you have your kid, as you're preparing for your kid. So it's not selfish. It's not, oh, I just needed this to recharge and take care of my kid. It's how you take care of your kid.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, the last one is, if you could make one meal for your family that everyone would eat that's relatively quick and easy, what would it be?
Oh my God. The extent to which I don't cook is hilariously going to come out here. And the answer is always pizza or mac and cheese.
That is a perfect line answer. Okay. I've had that answer many times, actually.
Like, I will be making a frozen pizza or mac and cheese, and we will go to bed shortly after that, and everyone will be happy. Everyone's going to be, I'm going to be jazzed
full
if it's pizza.
And happy. So,
yeah. 100%.
Well, thank you so much, Rebecca, for coming on here and talking to us about all these really important topics. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute blast.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. All resources mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes on lindsayandco.com. To continue these important conversations, head over to Motherhood Meets Medicine on Instagram. Let me know what you learned from this episode and who you would love to hear from next. I always love getting feedback from you. If you're finding value in this podcast, please rate, review, subscribe, and share with a friend. This will help us to reach even more women from around the world. I'll catch you next week. Until then, don't forget to find some time to unplug, unwind, and have a little fun.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.